This country was founded on genocide and enslavement. That's a reality that we have collectively decided to ignore, to try to push past. And you know, the fact is that many people still benefit, absolutely benefit from the sins of our past. It's really not our past. We continue to perpetuate it and reiterate it every single day of our lives, to the harm and hurt of many, for the benefit of a very few. It is a something that we absolutely have to reconcile with as a country, and that reconciliation is not going to just be, oh, we're sorry. There are actual, real, tangible things that we need to do, and a lot of work that has to be done by every person.
Like restorative justice, truth commissions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it is absolutely time that we start to pull out every tool in the toolbox instead of using what we have just known to use forever. The reality is that it doesn't work, and it hasn't worked for a long time. I love the fact that many people face, many Christians are starting to step up, because it is just a reminder in the scriptures when it tells us that the people perish for a lack of vision. It is our duty to have vision in this time, that we cannot be too lazy to not create something new, so that we don't continue, you know, so we can create a space where we don't have to witness murders every day, where murders don't have to happen by the hands of people who we've trusted. It is our obligation, again, to create something different, to have the vision, to cast the vision. And it's going to take a lot of both political and prophetic imagination to do it. But I know that we can.
You were studied practical theology in Scotland, in Aberdeen University, and then you went on a placement and you worked in L'Arche. How did that influence you, that experience of working? Because I know that people who have gone there have often been transformed by the experience.
It was an incredibly transformative experience, especially after spending a year of deep intellectual exegesis and you know, study of theology, to just be in a space to learn how to be present, to really let go of a lot of the intellectualizing of God, and to just experience God with people. And you know, one of my favorite things that ever happened in L'Arche, so I was, you know, I'm a Black American woman, not a huge common thing to happen in Scotland, certainly not in the Highlands. And I'm living in the house in L'Arche with mostly, you know, people who are Scottish. And it was for the first time that I had not felt like I'm just like the sore thumb that sticks out. I just felt like I could just be. I was just a human with the folks who lived with me. And I had felt like that for weeks, you know, living there. And one day we're all sitting at the dinner table. It was, you know, part of our practice that we'd all have dinner together. And we're all sitting at the dinner table, and one of the gentlemen who is a core member who lives in L'Arche and has lived there for a long time, he looks at me and he says, I was actually talking about one of my favorite baby dolls growing up with some of my housemates. And he says, was your baby Black? And I was like, yes, they were. But it was just such a, it reminded me that, you know, this like notion of where we want to be a melting pot and not see race. The reality is that like race is a beautiful thing. Like our different colors are a beautiful thing. Us being made in God's image, I wholeheartedly believe, is that, you know, the fact that we are different colors and shapes and we look different is because God is just so massive beyond what we could fathom. We all get a bit of peace of God. And so for me to be fully recognized for just, yes, my baby doll was Black, and you know that I'm Black, and that is, and I'm still feel whole and loved and welcome. That is the kind of space that we have to create everywhere.
And you went back then to America. That experience, has it influenced the work you're doing now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is, if anything, it's just reminded me how critical human life is, and that there's an inclination by some to, again, want to create a hierarchy of people to say that some people are worthy and some people aren't, that your worth is found in what you do or produce, that we've allowed a capitalist society to declare who is more value and who's deserving of things. And the biggest thing that L'Arche taught me was that this love that God has for each and every one of us, it is greater than what we could ever fathom. We're called to love people that way. And if we are really truly doing that, we have to put ourselves on the line when we see others being hurt, when we see others being harmed, when we see and hear people try to validate someone being murdered because they had a counterfeit $20 bill. It should completely rock all of us to the point where we don't feel settled, where we feel completely compelled to do something.
You seem to have had that experience. You mentioned earlier that you were hopeful that something is different this time. Are you hopeful? And what would you say to people listening to this interview, say here in Ireland even, what do we need to be doing to be part of it? We all are addressed by these issues, aren't we, as Christians?
Absolutely. And I am most certainly loving the ways in which people are continuing to keep this in the forefront, continuing to protest, continuing to lift up their voices. What I don't want to happen is that we think we're done. We go, we march, we go home, and we've done the work, because that is just the bare bones. And if we think like that, then it's really just performative. It's actually not making the changes we need. You know, we saw and we have seen many police officers here in the U.S. take a knee in some kind of show of solidarity. But the reality is if once they take those few moments of taking a knee and having the pictures taken and the cameramen leave, when they go back to their precincts, are they then going through each and every policy, every procedure, every training to dismantle the white supremacy that is ingrained in that? If they're not doing that work, then them taking a knee means nothing. And that same thing applies to each and every person who's going out and protesting. When you go back home, look at your work policies. What is the policies in the schools that you go to? How, in what ways have they continued to benefit from a white supremacist society that has continued to hurt and harm folks of color? Are they paying, you know, black and brown people fair wages, livable wages? Are they offering things like healthcare? Are they making education free and public and quality? Like, these are the things that we actually need to do to create real change. And we can't just absolutely, again, I most certainly don't want to undermine the importance of protest. It's a huge reason why we got to where we are now. And that has to happen hand in hand with real systemic changes to policies, to procedures, to legislation, to how we do everything. So that's kind of where that cautious optimism comes from. I do think that some folks are starting to realize that that's the next step and are wrestling with how to start.
You radiate that hope. Does that come from your faith?
It absolutely does. And it comes from, quite frankly, working with and being with a bunch of people of faith who feel the way I do. I think if I were out trying to lone wolf this, if I was trying to do this on my own, I would be in a lot of despair. But because I have other people of faith who also feel inspired by the ministry of Jesus Christ,